damage that the Govite does, you see. So Rabbi Shimon Eloza says, even for Chagav, you should do it. Tana Rabbanan, another thing in connection with the, you know, special prayers for trees, he says, Masrino Elyonos, when? Vishor Shnei Shavua, in the other years of the Shavua. Now, here we have to translate the word Shavua as meaning a seven-year period, right. Which very often the Talmud it means that, but not just the word week, but, you know, it means like a group of seven years, Shavua, okay? So, the other years of the Shavua, in other words, the other years, in other words, the first, the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, then, in that particular case, you have to pray, you know, for if you see that the trees are affected. But when don't you do it? Not during the year of Shemitah. Why? Because we're not allowed to work the trees, and this would be beneficial to the trees, and therefore it would be sort of in the nature of doing an agricultural act, you know, if we were to pray for
otherwise if there was a drought during the
Shemitah, right.
Ignore it.
This is his opinion. Okay?
If there's a drought that doesn't fill the reservoirs, you could cry out during the Shemitah year, couldn't
that's
you?
Exactly what it says. Okay. Take a look.
Right.
You have anticipated. You see, your mind is so sharp that no one's coming in the next. Al Haboros is here. It sounds so specifically.
Yeah, right.
But Al Haboros, the Al Hashikh, the Al Haboros, but when there isn't water in the cisterns and in the ditches and in the caves, mm-hmm. then Afilo Bashvis, and even in the seventh year, in other words, even in the Shemitah year, you have to pray. It's already a more difficult situation. Rabbi Shimon Ben Yolomer, and he says, Af al halilonos bashvis. No, he says, we should also pray even on behalf of the trees during the seventh year. Why? Because the poor people can find sustenance from the trees during the year of Shemitah. What is the law concerning Shemitah? All right, so we know that during that year, the fruits become, as we would say, hefker. In other words, they're available to everybody, right? So in that case, poor people can come and they can take the fruit of the and eat it. Okay, so what would happen if there's a drought affecting the trees? Then it's going to cut into the parnasa of the poor people. So on their behalf, therefore too, we have to shrite to Rabbeinu Shalom, you know, that he should bring rainfall for the trees. Tanya Idach, there's another tradition where it says Masrin al Huilonois Bishor Shnei Shavua, that, you know, we shrive for the trees the other years of the 7 year cycle, for Al Haboros Al Shikhan Al Ma'oros, and you know, for the cisterns and the ditches and the caves, Afilu Bashvis, even in the seventh year. And Rabbi Shimon Ben Yolomer, Af Al Huilonois Masrin. And likewise, he says that in the seventh year we also recite prayers on behalf of the trees, al hasfichin shebeshvius, for the what is called aftergrowth, or what grows by itself naturally, okay, in the seventh year. In reality, it's the same as the previous one. It's just that the wording is slightly different. How is the wording a little bit different? So as you see, that you know, here they add al hasfichin. So in other words, he's a little bit more specific. I mean, what does it mean by spichin? So this is the Torah says, you know, esafich tzirchol esiktzor, esafin esiktzor. In other words, we're not allowed to reap or to harvest, you know, that which grows by itself during the seventh year. Instead, you know, everybody comes and takes. But you're not allowed to do any business during those years. Okay? Tanya. Another tradition that we have. Omer Rabbi Elozer ben Parto said, Miyom Shechara Beis HaMikdosh, from the day that the Beis HaMikdosh was destroyed, Nasu Gishomim Tzimukim Lo Elon. Says, the rain has become literally dried up for the world. Okay? Tzimukim in Hebrew, for example, raisins are called smukim, okay? Because they're dried grapes, right, okay?
Simukim.
Right. Or what would be shesifin smukim?
prunes.
This would be prunes, right? You know, dried plums, literally, and so on. So the rain too, it's become shriveled. It's become shrunk. You know, yeshana. Of course, you could ask the following question: why is it only since the time that the Beis Hamikdash has been destroyed? So the answer is because during the time that the Beis Hamikdash was in existence, the Kohen Gadol always on Yom Kippur would say a special prayer that there should be plenty of rain on behalf of everybody over there. You know, we still read it. It's not only in, you know, the Mishnah and Gemara and so on, but we also read it in the Avodah service on Yom Kippur. If you stay around the shul that long and you'd be, you know, you look at the English translation of, you know, what we're saying over there in the text over there. You see that it's a very beautiful tefillah of the Kohen Gadol that he would recite in the Beis Hamikdash. For example, he would say, you know, that he would pray that it should be Shana Geshumo Im Shakuna, that if the year is dry, it's hot and so on, that it should be a rainy year. And he would pray, you know, it should be Shnas Oisem, a year in which the bonds will be full, Shnas Brocha, and so on and so forth, right? It should be a year of blessing and joy and so on and so forth. Okay, so we had a Kohen Gadol, you know, who could pray these things on our behalf. Now we don't have it, so that therefore he says, you know, that since the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed, so therefore the rains themselves have become like dried up for the world. Yeshano, there is a year, he says, She Gishamehu Merubin, that has many, you know, the rain can be very plentiful, right? The Yeshano She Gishamehu Motim, but on the other hand, you have years in which the rain is very scarce. Yeshano She Gishamehu Yodim Ismanon. They could have a year in which the rains fall in their proper time. And then you could have a year in which the rains will not fall in their regular time. A year in which the rain actually falls at the right time. What can you compare it to? It's the Eved. You can compare it to a servant whose master gave him everything right on the first day of the week. He gave him the entire amount of money in advance. So Nim says, Isa nefes kesikna. So we find, you know, that he has enough time for the dough in his oven, so to speak, to be baked the way it should. Benechelis kesikna, and it could be eaten in the proper manner. In other words, he has enough and he can space it out and he can do it, you know, so that it's his best advantage. So that's when there is enough rain. Shana Shein Gishomehu Yodim Izmanim. How about a year in which the rain doesn't come at the right time? The Mahu Dome, what can you compare it to? He says, the Ebed Shonosomai Rabbi Panosa Sobi Erev Shabbos. It's like a servant whose master gave him his Panosa, not gave him his wage, Erev Shabbos. So, as a result of that, there's hardly any time in order to do anything, right? So, Nib says, Isone Feshalo, so we find that the dough doesn't have really time enough, you know, to be baked properly. And also, it has to eat. It has to be eaten, Shalai Kisikno. And it has to be eaten also, not the way it should. Shono Shagashomeho Merubin. Now, how about a year in which there is a great deal of rain, the Mahudoma? What is it like? It says, Le'evet, Shonosanoi Rabbi Panasasoba Vasachas. It's like a servant to whom his master gave his entire, you know, wage at one shot, right to begin with. Nimtzu Rechayim Techanos Min HaKor, Masha Tokanos Min HaKav. So we find that when he grinds his flour, so the flour, the mill will grind, a kor, which is a large measure of the grain, right? Masha Tokanakav, whatever, from a small measure. To explain this, you have to understand. Of course, you know, we don't do these things anymore, so we don't see it. But the idea is that when you grind flour, there's going to be a certain amount of waste, okay? But the point that he's making is that you could grind a large amount of flour and have very little waste, and at the same time, what can you do? You can grind a small amount of flour, and, you know, it's still going to waste the same amount. So that, therefore, the advantage would be to have everything, you know, to have a large enough quantity. So this is like, so this is analogous to a year in which there is a plentiful rainfall, okay? We find also that the dough itself literally produces enough food from the large quantity as it produces from the small quantity. How about a year, however, in which the rainfall is scarce? The mahu dome, what is it like? He says, it's like the case where the servant receives his wage, so to speak, his panosa, only little by little. So nimsu rechayim, masha tochanos bin hakor, tochanos bin hakav. In other words, what they could have done in a large measure, what the mill could have ground out, it has to do it, you know, from a small amount. And so therefore, nimseis isor, kemashana echelis bin hakor, echelis bin hakav. And we find, therefore, that the amount of dough that you get is very, very small. I mean, we would think that maybe it would work out better, you know, the other way, that every time, you know, every day you get. But he says, no, it's better to have everything in advance so that you can actually plan and do it right and so on and so forth, you know, and not worry, you know, when you're finally going to get it.
Right.
Yeah. Dover Acher, another interpretation. Bisman Shagish Mehubin. That when the rain is, you know, plentiful, the mahu dome, what is it like? He says, the odom shemegabil es hatit. It's like a person who is mixing, the clay, right? Okay. In order to mix clay, you have to have water, right? And the sand, you know, that you mix, right? You mix it together, and of course, from this you get bricks and so on. Okay. So he says. In Yeshlo Mayim Rabim, if he has plenty of water to do it, then Mayim Einan Kolin. Then in that case, the water doesn't run out on him. In other words, he still has plenty of water to work with. The Hatit Megubal Yopen, the clay that, you know, the bricks, so to speak, that he makes out of clay, he has he can turn out a beautiful product because he has enough water in order to make it right. If Yeshlo Mayim Otim, on the other hand, what if he has very little rain, very little water? And in that case, Mayim Kolim, the water runs out. In other words, he doesn't have any more. The Atit Eino Miskabel Yofeh, and the clay simply doesn't hang together well. It's not kneaded well. Okay? And now we have a beautiful little story which we will close this evening. Tana Rabbanan, our sages taught us, Pamachas, once upon a time, all Jews went up in order to make their pilgrimage to Yerushalayim. But they didn't have any water to drink because there was a scarcity of water that year. So, Holach Nagdimin ben Gurion, so Nagdimin, son of Gurion, went, Eitzel Odon Echad. He came to a certain lord. A lord.
A lord,
you know, like some Roman bigshot who owned land in Eretz Yisrael. Okay.
Actually, Ben
Gurion
was a name from the town.
Yeah, right. His real name was Green, you know.
I know. He just took it from.
Right.
The gourd for the lion.
Right.
It's
right.
Actually,
Ben Gurion.
Okay, but as you see, here's Ben Gurion. Okay. Nakdimon Ben Gurion. Okay. So, So anyway, you know, we saw that, you know, the pilgrims were suffering from thirst, right? So he went to a certain lord, as I say, you know, like a Roman big shot over there, and Omalo, and he said to him, he says, you lend me 12 literally springs of water for those who are going up on pilgrimage. And in return, I will give you, I'll give you also, you know, as your reward, 12 springs of water. And if I don't give it to you, then in that case, in other words, if I can't pay you back with 12 12 springs of water, so then I will give you 12 talents of silver, which is tremendous fortune. Okay? The Kovalos man, and he set for him a date, you know, when it comes due, right? When he has to repay. Kevan Shigia Hasban. So when the time came, Velo Yodu Geshomim, and there was no rain, so Bishachris Sholach Lo, so this Lord sent to him in the morning, and he said, Shigali, send me, he says, O Mayim Omoz, Sheyeshli Biodecha. Send me, he says, either the water, of course, meaning the springs of water, or the money that you owe me. Sholach Lo. So what did Nagdiman send to him as a message? He sent him a message, and he said, Adayin Yeshli Zman, Kol Hayom Kulo, Sheli. Says, I still have time yet to repay you, because all this day still belongs to me. In other words, I can still pay you any time during the day. Okay. Batzohorayim, came noon, Sholach Lo. So again, he sent him a message. And he said, Shigali, O Mayim Amos, send me, he says, money, water or money. Sheyeshli biyodecha, you know, which you owe me. So Sholach Lo, so again he sent him back a message, and he said, Adayin Yeshli Shehus Bayom. I still have time, it's still daylight yet, right? Okay. B'mincha came later in the afternoon. So Sholach Lo, again he sent him the message. Shigali Omayim Omos, Sheyeshli biyodecha. Send me either my water or the money that you owe me. Sholach Lo, so he sent him the following message. He says, Adayin Yeshli Shehus, I still have time, Bayom. Still enough time left during the day. Ligleg Olavo Sa'odon. So this Lord, he mocked him, he made fun of him. He said, Omar, he said, Kol Ashanu Kula Lo Yodu Geshomim. All year long, no rain has fallen. The Aksha Yerdu Geshomim, and now rain is going to fall. It didn't rain until now. You think it's going to rain tonight? I mean, today. So Nichlas the Beis Hamerchatz, and so this Lord went into the bathhouse besimcha joyously, right? And you know, he was very, very happy. So Ad she'oda Nichlas besimchos the Beis Hamerchatz. So while this Lord was playing around over there in his joy in the bathhouse, Nagdimin Nichlas the Beis Hamikdash. Nagdiman entered the Beis Hamikdash, Kishehu Otsev, while he was sad. Nis'atev, he wrapped himself around in his cloak, which was like a sign of mourning, V'yomad b'tfilah, and he stood in prayer. Omar lefonov, and he said, Rebbeinu shel Olam, Golui v'yodu lefonecho, it is revealed and known unto you, you know, Shelo lechvodei osisi, I did not do it for my own glory, for lo lechvod beis abo asisi, nor did I do it for the sake of my family, elo lechvodcho asisi. I did it for your sake. Sheyuhu mayim mitzuyin lo eli regolim, so that there would be enough water available for the pilgrims who were going up to, to Yerushalayim, to the Beis Hamikdash. So miyad niskashu shamayim biavim yodu gushomim. And so immediately, literally, the sky became thick with clouds, right? And rain started and falling. And rain so much that these 12 springs of water, you know, were full of water. And not only that, but there still was a surplus beyond them. So, Ad Sheyotzo Adomi Beis Hamechatz. And this was all going on during the time, until the time that the boss, that the Lord went out of the bathhouse. So, Nagdimin Ben Gurin Yotzvim Beis Hamikdosh. And while this guy was coming out of the Beis Hamechatz, Nagdimin Ben Gurin came out of the Beis Hamikdosh. So when they met each other, Omar Lo, so again the guy said to him, Tain li demei mayim yosel sheyeshli biyodecha. He says, give me, you know, all the surplus water that you have, that you owe unto me.
According to the article, he's saying it to the Lord.
Nakdimon is saying to the Lord, not the Lord is again saying to Nakdimon.
No, all right. Sinazoi.
Well,
Sinazoi.
Right.
Let's see.
Could he ask gold? Nakdimon is now asking the Lord for the money because there's more water in the wells than when he.
Bargain for.
Maybe. Yeah, it could be interpreted that way. He's saying, all right, give me payment for the water, for the surplus water.
Yosef.
Yeah, that you owe me. All right. Son and son, I'm not going to argue the point.
No.
Okay, so Omalo. So the guy said unto him, he said, look, he says, Yodeani Shalohirish HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael Lamoel Bishvilcha. He says, you know, I know that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam literally didn't bring, a tumult in this world. In other words, he didn't cause this, what shall we say, this feat of nature to happen only for your sake. Elo adayin yeshli piskam perlecha. She'otzi mimecho es moisai. But nevertheless, I still have a good reason, he says, a good argument why I should get my money from you. Why? Because look, the sun has already set, right? And therefore, it didn't rain during the time when it was still daylight, but once only after it was already dark outside, right? And so therefore, Gishomim Birshusi, then this rain belongs to me, not to you, Nakdimon, okay? Birshusi Yordu. So, Chozov and Nichlas of Beis HaMikdash. So again, Nakdimon went and returned to the Beis HaMikdash, Nisate for Yomad B'Tfilah. And again, he wrapped himself around with his cloak and he stood in prayer, V'Yomar, Lepon of Rabbeinu Shel Olam, and he said to Rabbeinu Shel Olam, he said, Hoda, make known, Sheyesh Lecha Ahuvim Yolamecha. Make known that there are those who love you or who are beloved by you in this world. So miyad, immediately in this pasru ha'ovim, the clouds scattered, the zorcha achamo, and the sun shone the yosesha at that moment. So omalo adon. So the Lord said unto him, ilu lo nikdara achamo. If it weren't for the fact that the sun is shining, I really would have a good argument against you. That I could get my money from you. Okay, and so we conclude now, which says, Tana, so we have a tradition which says, Lo Nakdimon Shmo, his name really was not Nakdimon, Elo Buni Shmo, his name was Buni. So why was he given the name Nakdimon? The answer is Shenikdara Kamabavro, because the sun shone on his behalf. Alright, so Mirzah Hashem, next week we shall continue from this particular point, the middle of Chaf Amud Aleph.
Amud Aleph.
Alright. Okay.
October 12th, 1994.
Yeah, that's today, right? I love to Columbus. Alright. Right in the middle of the page, second line over there, okay? Good evening, how are you, Sam? Shalom Aleichem, it's good to see you. Alright, start over there. Tona Rabbanan. I'll wait a second for Sam to. Okay. Tona Rabbanan. All right, so the Gemara continues, inasmuch as we read the story of Nakdimon, so now they continue with a couple of other people for whom a similar type of a miracle occurred. Our sages taught, Shlosha Nikdimon Lahem Chamo Ba'aburan. There are three people for whom the sun shone, naturally it means it's shone at the time when it should have already been sunset, right? It's shown for their sake. Moshe, okay, Yehoshua, mm-hmm. Nakdim and Ben-Gurion, all right, with Moses and Joshua and Nakdim and Ben-Gurion. So they say, Bishtumo, Nakdim and Ben-Gurion, okay, Nakdim and Ben-Gurion already said it's Gomorrah. In other words, we just learned this as a tradition, okay? Yehoshua, Name Kro. As far as Joshua is concerned, we also have a pasuk that says so specifically. Dichsiv, what is the pasuk? The pasuk says, that the sun stood still right? And the moon also stopped. In other words, it stopped where it was in its tracks, okay? Of course, there's the famous story about the battle in Ayalon, you know, where he needed that extra time in order to defeat the enemy, and so he prayed, and the miracle took place. Right, right. Very good.
Turn off that buzzer.
Oh.
Must be in one of the boats.
Yeah, it is.
The last one.
Ela Moshe Menalon. But how do we know that Moshe too, that the sun stood still for his sake? After all, where is it written in the Torah? There is no such place in the Torah. So how do we know? So, Omar Rabbi Elazar said, Atzia Ochel Ochel. He says, we derive this from a Gezerah Shavah. Remember, Gezerah Shavah means, you know, that you have two similar words, and so therefore, if it is true in situation B, then it has to be true also in situation A, or vice versa, okay? And so, therefore, he takes it from the word Ochel. Where is Ochel? Says Hayom, okay. So Ksiv Ochel, he explains. Here, namely in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, it's written Ochel Teis Pach Decha. The Pasuk says over there that, you know, Moshe actually says to the people of Israel, he said to him, Hayom Ochel Teis Pach Decha V'yiros HaPnei V'amim, that now I'm about, you know, this very day I'm about to cause the fear of you and reverence for you, you know, to come to all the people upon the face of the earth. If they hear, you know, what you are doing, then in that particular case they will be trembling before you. So of course his reference is to the miracles that happened to the people of Israel as they wander through the wilderness and God's loving kindness to them. So there it's written then, Ochel Teis Bachtecho, I shall begin literally to put your fear, or perhaps it means I will place your fear, or something like that. Depends on how you define the word Ochel, which normally means I will begin, but maybe it could be understood in another way as well. Alright, Uchsiv Hosam, and there, meaning of course in the case of Joshua, we find that there God says unto him that today, Hayom Ochel Gadelcha, I will begin to make you great, of course, again in the eyes of everybody. So inasmuch as we have the word Ochel in one situation, Ochel in the other, so therefore, since we know what happened to Joshua, that the sun stood still for him, so we assume then that likewise the same thing happened to Moshe Rabbeinu. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Omar, Shmuel Bar Nachmani had a different Gezerah Shavah. Again, I have to say what I've said several times in the past. A Gezerah Shavah works only if there's a tradition for it. In other words, I can't take any any two words and say that, presto, I have a Gezerah Shavah, you know. If I take the word S, which occurs thousands and thousands of times, I can't say because it's written S over here and S over there. That doesn't work that way. So there has to be a tradition from a recognized sage in order to make a Gezerah Shavah have any weight. Okay?
What does a
Gezerah
Shavah mean?
Gezerah Shavah means literally equal cut.
Equal cut?
Equal cut. That's literally what it means. But what it means, as I said, as far as the methodology of the Talmud is concerned, it means that a word that we find in situation A and the same word we find in situation B, that it is possible, if we have the tradition for it, to say that what takes place in A takes place in B, or vice versa, what takes place in B takes place in A. Okay? So Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani had a different word that he used for the same idea for the Hizik Gezerah Shavah. Says Omar, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani Omar, he said, Ask your taste. I derive it, he says, from the word taste. Siv Hocha, again, in connection with Moshe, it's written, Ochel Teis Pachtecho, right? Today, I am going to begin to cast your fear upon the face of all the nations. Of Siv Hosam, and there, it's written, Biyom Teis HaRashemes V'Emori, that in the day when God gave the Amorites into the hands of Joshua, or into the hands of the people of Israel. Okay? So, that was his Gezerah Shavah. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Rabbi Yochanan says, wait a minute. He says, Asya I get it, he says, Begufe de Kri, I get it right out of the Pasuk itself. I don't need a Gezerah Shav, I get it out of the Pasuk itself. It's written, Asher Yishma'un Shemacho, V'ragizu V'cholu Miponecha. That Moshe Rabbeinu says to the people of Israel that when the nations of the world hear what you have done, literally they hear, you know, they're hearing, you know, in other words, they hear the report about you, right? Then the rugs of a cholo, they will tremble and have jitters miponecha before you. A mosai, rugs of a cholo miponecha. And when did talk of this event happen that the peoples of the nations, that the peoples of the earth trembled and had their jitters? Is Bishah Shinokbana Chamala Moshe. It happened at the time when the sun shone for Moshe Rabbeinu. So, on this basis, then we say that, listen, Moshe Rabbeinu certainly was the equal of Joshua or of Nachum and Ben Gurion. I mean, he was, you know, our greatest leader. So, why should the same thing have happened in his particular case? Okay? All right. Maybe we'll take a look at the Rashi for a couple of moments, because Rashi goes into this business with the methodology. All right, let's start on the third line over there. Okay, Asya Ochel Ochel. You see it on the third line in the Rashi.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it says Ksiva Milchemes Yoshua. That's written, you know, in connection with the wars that Joshua waged. And Ochel Gadelcha. Right, I will begin to make you great. And as far as when Moshe recounts the wars that the people of Israel had to fight against the Amorites and the other people, Ksiv over there, that Ochel Teis Bachtecha, right? I will begin to give, to cast your fear upon them. So Ma Yehoshua Nikba Eloi Chamo B'milchamtei. So even as in the case of Joshua, the sun shone for him in his war, as it is written specifically there in the Pasuk. So Af Moshe, so likewise Moshe, Cain, likewise you have to say, Shekain, Derech HaKsuvim, because it is the way of the scriptural Pesukim that Lomad Sosum Min HaMeforash, that they learn things that are hidden literally, in other words, things that we don't see, you know, written about openly from things that are written about openly. All right, beremes, bedimur.
I missed something there.
Yeah.
Could you just repeat what you said?
It says shekain derech haksuvim, that it is the way of scriptural passages. Okay, kosov over here means like pesukim.
Yeah.
Okay. That lamad sosum min hamafarash, that you learn that which is hidden. In other words, that which is not written specifically, we learn it min hamafarash, from that which is written openly or specifically. In other words, in the case of Joshua, it's written specifically, you know, that the sun stood still for him. Okay? So we learn now there is beremes, there's a hint, bedibor, do melechadero, through some expression which is similar to another expression, or ugezeira shova, right? And Gezeira Shova, he says, is achas min yud gimu mido shenitnu loy l'moshe misinai, that this was one of the 13 ways that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Mount Sinai to use in expounding, to use in, you know, in teaching the words of the Torah, right? The teachings of the Torah. We say it every day, right? Rabbi Shmuel Omer, b'shlosh le'midro es hatun adrashus, right? So the first thing that they mention is Makal v'chomer, right? Which, as we know, means that if this is the case, then all the more so, right? It should be, right. So that's the Kal v'chomer. Ugezeira shava. So there you have it written. I mean, that this is definitely one of the ways recognized as a way of expounding the Torah, okay? And he tells us that at the beginning of the Sifra, which is the Medrash Halacha, as we would say, for the book of Vayikra, the book of Leviticus, so there it is right at the very beginning of it. Matter of fact, if you'll take a look in the Siddur, you know, where they give you the sources of it, That's, for example, let's take the Birnbaum, okay? Where he tells you, where does this passage come from? So in that particular case, you'll see that he quotes it as Sifra. Okay? Right. Take a look. About page 41, or something like that, it should be in the Birnbaum.
Yes, I think you're right, for a change. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Sifra Psicha, he says. You know, in the Hebrew he says this of the Sifra, it's right at the very beginning, and he says over here Sifra introduction, okay? Mm-hmm. Because the Sifra, you know, this is the introduction. And then after that they begin to go Pasuk by Pasuk, you know, Vayikra El Moshe, you know, why is there a little Aleph and so on and so forth and so on. Okay? We understand, I mean, Rashi felt it was important for us to realize that the Gezeirah Shoveh is one of the important ways in being able to deduce something from passage A to passage B. But again, as I say, there has to be
a tradition
for it. You can't simply invent it. Okay?
I mean, a tradition for making the...
Saying that this is a legitimate Gezeirah Shoveh. Exactly. In other words, just, you know, taking two words together, it's not enough. You have to have a tradition that goes with it. And the tradition has to be a well-established tradition in the name of some famous teacher.
Then, in this particular case...
Yeah, there were two traditions, as you can see. One of them said it was from taste, and the other one is from ochel, and so on.
So that makes it an established tradition.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, by the way, I just want to take one more moment. Over here, the text says, "Bishosha nikdamo lo chamele Moshe," and of course, nikdamo reminds us of what? Of nakdimon, as you can see, right? That it's shown for him. Now, the more normal verb actually would be nakad, which also can mean to be spotted or something like that, because with Yaakov Avinu, if you remember, he tried his experiments in biology over there.
Yeah, with the sheep.
And the kudim and so on, you know, the spotted sheep and so on, okay? So, but it also has the idea of shining. So there are those things. But we have other texts where it says nikdaro. Take a look at the Tosfos on top. Okay? And right, and then the tradition that says that the reading here is nikdaro, then he says, kamo mekader behorim, like when you make holes in the hills or something like that. In other words, with the sun, like it penetrates with its rays into the hills. So, right.
Okay.
Or, as he says, kalomer, or another idea would be shemenakev. In other words, it makes holes in what? Orokia, in the firmament itself. The sun is making like a hole in order to come through. So that's why we see it, because it's coming through a hole in the firmament. Okay. Well, as you can see, I mean, they try to work out, you know, the words in order to trace it to the sources and so on, but there are different readings that we find over here. If we would compare it, for example, with some of the other commentaries that we have on the side over there, like Rabbeinu Hananel and Rabbeinu Gershon, we'll see that sometimes there is a slight difference in the variation, or in the Bach or the footnotes that you have over here, where they have, again, you know, variant readings or whatever it may be. All right.
Like a laser would shine and a laser would appear.
Yeah, right.
So.
Okay, very good. Yashar
Koach. Thank you.
All right. Now, if you remember going back to the Mishnah at the beginning of this chapter, where they begin with a whole list of things for which Masriyim, right? You have to begin to shrei gival and pray unto God. Maybe it also means blow shofar. As I said, you know, there are the two ideas, you know, that are combined over there. And what are some of these various disasters? So it continues by saying, you know, so first we dealt with a scarcity of water, if you remember. And we also spoke that there could be a scarcity of water which would affect trees, which would affect plants, which would affect the wells and the ditches and the cisterns and the water that's stored in caves, okay? And, you know, what might be good for one may not be good for the other and so on and so forth. But, you know, when under those circumstances do we shrei? Then they raise another one. It says, V'chein ir, I'm quoting again from the Mishnah, V'chein ir, and likewise the case of a city, Shelo yordu aleha gishomim, where rain has not fallen upon it, Dichsiv, and I bring a pasuk from Amos, where it says, V'himtarti al ir achaz, that God says, I brought rain upon one city, Yal ir achaz lo amtir, and upon another city I did not cause the rain to fall. Chelko achaz demoter, one field was watered with rain, and another one never received any rain, whatever. Okay? So, therefore, what do we have to do? So, it said on the next page over there on your test on the top, take a look again. I'm quoting again the Mishnah, so we see this is the text that we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you do in such a situation? So it says, Oiso ha'ir misano maswas, right? The city which is affected with drought, where there is no rain, so they have to fast over there, and they have to shkagevalt, right? V'chol sivivo seho misano is v'loi maswas. And all the towns in the area over there, they fast, but they don't have to shy, okay? And Rabbi Akiva, Omer, but Rabbi Akiva says, maswas, that they shy v'lo misanos. And but they do not fast. All right, but of course Rabbi Akiva is only a minority opinion in this particular case. In this particular case, what the Tanakhama, in other words, what the anonymous Mishnas that we just quote on the top of the page, this is accepted as being the halacha, so that the people of that city have to fast and shrei gevalt, and in the neighboring towns, right, they fast, but they don't have to go shrei gevalt. And by shrei gevalt, of course, we mean like taking out the ark,
right, and blowing the shofar.
Right, and blowing the shofar and going through, you know, all the things that we discussed at the beginning of the second chapter.
The towns around have to have some kind of a sympathy.
Right, of course, absolutely. They have to have sympathy with the city which is affected. 100% right. All right, so going back over here. Omar Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda said as follows. He says, Omar Rav, and he said in the name of Rav, he says, Ushtehen Liklolo. He says, both of them, meaning both the cities who had rain and who didn't have rain,
they are
cursed.
Yeah.
Now, of course, that's a little hard to understand, because what would be the curse of having water, you know, in those places where it exists? So let's take a look at the Rashi. See, Shtehen Liklola, it's up on top, roughly about 9-10 lines. Okay? Right after the one that we just finished reading.
Okay. Yeah.
You see Shtehen Liklola over there?
Yeah.
Obviously.
About 50.
Okay. So he tells us, first of all, Akrokai. He's talking about the Pasuk, which we quoted before in the Mishnah itself. Hidesiv, you know, the Pasuk we're in, and it's written out, Irachas Amtir, right? Upon one city I brought rain, the Ali Achas Layamtir, and upon the other city I am not giving rain. He says, Shnehem Liklola. He says, actually, both of these cities are being cursed. Why? Oseh Sheyamtir Aleho, the city upon which there is rain, that says, Rov Geshomim. It's going to have such a multitude of rain, in other words, going to rain so much, Shemekalkalinis Hatvua, right? And because it's going to spoil the crops of the field.
Texas.
Yeah, like Texas, exactly. The same thing. Absolutely. And as far as the city where there is no rain, so there's no rain, and of course there will not be any produce grown. Then he gives us another taich, and he says that as far as where it's written, you know, that the city is not going to have any rain fall upon it, he says this is in connection with the clouds, she'ov b'lishon keva, because the word of sometimes in this particular case is feminine in gender. Dichsiv hinei ob ketano kechap ish oilo mayim. It's like a small cloud, only the size of the hand of a man, and it's going to and it's rising from the water. This is a pasuk that we find with right you are Eliyahu HaNavi when he challenged the people on Mount Carmel. Okay, but why exactly Rashi brought this in, I'm not sure myself, because at this moment it's not pertinent to what we're saying. All that we're saying, that Shtehen and Klala, is that
both cities have cards.
Right, both the city that has rain and the city that doesn't have, because the city that has rain could have too much rain, as we've already seen and mentioned. Okay.
He's just pointing out that Av is feminine by saying Av Katana. Is that why he brings it in, to show that Katana is feminine?
Well, he's bringing that in to show that it's feminine. This is correct. But I don't know why Rashi brings this in over here, because at this moment it's not pertinent to it. But I'm sure that Rashi had something in the back of his mind, only I haven't read it yet. Okay. Now, at this particular point, we have further exposition of certain sukkim. See in a second that now he takes some of the sukkim from Eicha, very first chapter in Eicha. Okay, you know Eicha is the book of Lamentations that we read on Tisha B'Av. Okay, and of course we know it's a very more okay. And we're going to see that in the next group of psukim that they interpret, in reality they're looking always for the silver lining. They don't want to have, you know, curses so final that, you know, that there's no hope.
No hope.
Instead they want to make sure that even when we have to bear a curse, but nevertheless there's also a silver lining to it, that it could turn out to be a good thing as well.
Some good even to a
caller. Right, there's some good in it, right. As we would say, the silver lining, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so. Hoy so Yerushalayim and Dindor b'neihem. The Pasuk says in Eicha that Jerusalem became like a nidor in their midst. The nidor, as we know, is a woman who has a period, okay? Mm-hmm. Of course, when she has a period, it means that her husband cannot have anything to do with her. But not only that, but, you know, physically we know that it's not a very pleasant thing that happens, you know, that it's a bloody mess, okay? All right, we know that. So, Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav, so Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, by the way, notice that these psukim, I mean, these interpretations are by Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav. First he says to stay in the klal, now he has another interpretation, right? And he says, Livracha, says, you know, this pasuk, however, could also be understood as a blessing. What is the blessing? Kenida. Let's take the case of Nido, he says. Okay, he says, Ma Nido yesh lo heter, just as after the woman has had her flow, right? And then she becomes free once more, you know, from the flow, and she's able once more to resume being together with her husband. So, Af Yerushalayim, the same thing to Yerushalayim. Yesh lo takona. She also can look forward to, literally, a bettering of her condition, right? In other words, Yerushalayim too. Right now she is desolate, but the day will come when she will once more be filled with people. Okay? Hoyesor kal mono. Remember, Eicha, Yoshua, right? Ho'ira, Bosiyam, Hoyesor kal mono. It says, you know, the city which so great in population has now become like a widow. So again, I mean, like a widow is a terrible thing. I mean, we know, God, you know, Rahman al-Islam, we know plenty of widows, you know, right. We know how difficult the situation is. But Omar Rav Yehuda, but Rav Yehuda says, Lebracha. In reality, you can interpret this pasuk as a blessing. How? It says, Ke almona. The pasuk says, like a widow. It does the below almona. It doesn't say she has become an almona. It says she has become like an almona. Right? Below almona, mamash, and not really an almona. Elo, rather, ke'isho sholach balalum din sayom, rather like a woman whose husband has gone off to a far off country. V'datu lachzor alecha, but his intention is to return to her. In other words, she will not be deserted eternally by her husband, but he will come back. So likewise, the people of Israel and the Bnei Shalit, that he too, his intention is to return unto her. All right. Then there's a pasuk in Malachi which says, "V'gam ani nosati eschem nizim ushpolim." That likewise, says the prophet, "I have made you nivzim." Nivzim means despised, ushpolim, and lowly. Okay. By whom? By the goyim, of course. Okay. Now, it could be understood, of course, as punishment of the people of Israel.
Israel, yeah.
But at the same time, Omer Rav Yehuda says the bracha could also be understood as a blessing. What is the blessing? The loy mukbin minon, that they're not going to take from us, literally, they're not going to raise from our midst, lo rei she'nare, velo gzirite. Neither rei she'nare, rosh dara means, you know, a person who's in charge of crossing the river. In other words, they collect tolls for crossing the river. So Jews are not going to be appointed to that job. Why? Because, you know, like tax collectors in general, or toll collectors, people don't like them. We're not talking, you know, chas v'shalom, about what happens at, let's say, you go on the tribal bridge or something like that. I mean, you don't take it out personally on the toll collector. But at the same time, you do have a certain feeling of grievance. Why does the government have to take a toll for bridges and things like that, right? Bridges and tunnels and so on. I know that it was a great event in my life when Connecticut decided to abandon the tolls on the Turnpike and the Meruvagli. So Jews are not going to be given those positions of authority. So you'd say, but look, they're losing out on the merit scale. So he says, it's a klapa bargain, he says, because people hate the toll collectors, so Jews will not at least be subject to the hatred of people, you know, who hate toll collectors, okay? Below zirifte, this unusual word, and nobody's 100% sure exactly what it is, but we'll take Tosfos' interpretation right on the top of the page. See Tosfos, second line over there? Gzirifti, so Jews will not become Gzirifti. It says perished. Translation is Sardiotin, that means soldiers. Soldiers, of course, not in the Jewish army, but it means soldiers in the Goyish army, okay? Yeah. The Shotre Ha'om, the Makel, or people who are policemen and who have the authority to beat people with their batons, with their sticks and so on, their nightsticks, right? So again, it means that Jews will not be subjected to these odious conditions. All right, as we would say, this is not a job for a nice Jewish boy. Okay. So as a result, it will prevent hatred for the Jews. This is opinion. Look, I mean, we know it's not the world's greatest pleasure to serve in the Goyish army, although, of course, when something happens, as happened, you know, during the World War, Jews had to go. They had to do their share just as much as anybody else. We know that. But let's say to do it on a peacetime basis, you know, right? I mean, it's not, you know. We know. I don't mean to impugn, you know, the patriotism, chas v'shalom, of anybody who volunteers for the army. I think that they're doing work which is unfortunately necessary for the defense of this country. But at the same time, we know that for a boy who wants to keep kosher, it's not the easiest thing in the army, as we know. Okay. It's interesting that Julius Caesar had Jews fighting for him in the army.
Did?
Yeah. And he gave permission to Jews to keep Shabbos. They didn't have to violate Shabbos in his army. Something
fighters.
Which is very little known, I mean, because...
Was this in Josephus or something?
Josephus, you'll find it also, like, for example, in a book like Max Radin's Jews Among the Greeks and Romans. Okay? And it's also mentioned, you know, in things like Gretz and other Jewish histories.
Could they keep kosher?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
They probably slaughtered their own animals and so on, sure.
They preferred barley to meat. Okay, that's fine. No, at least barley was part.
And it wouldn't decompose that quickly.
Right.
And you can make drinks from it.
Right. Okay. Biden. Alright, now there's another pasuk. This happens to be taken from the Book of Kings, alright? This particular case It is the prophet Achiah Shiloni who is talking to Yeravim ben Nabat. And he predicts to him, he says, Vehikar Hashem es Yisrael, that God will smite Israel, of course, because of the sins of Yeravim and those who were to follow. Kasher yonud hakone b'mayim, even as the reed will sway in the water. So in other words, we consider reeds, you know, it's having no stability or anything like that, right? Because they're always swaying as the wind blows upon them, as the tides come and so on, okay? So Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, so he says, wait a minute, Livracha. He says, this could also be understood that it's a blessing. The Amar Rav Yishmuel Ben Achmeni, even as Rav Yishmuel Ben Achmeni said, Amar Rav Yochanan, Yonason, the name of Rabbi Yonason, others is Rabbi Yochanan, okay? He said, my dichsiv, what is the meaning of the pasuk where it says, Ne'monon pitzei ohev, v'ne'atores neshikai seinei? Very nice pasuk that we find in the book of Mishlei, the book of Proverbs, where Shlomo HaMelech says that the wounds of somebody who loves you, in other words, if somebody who loves you wounds you, he hurts you, ne'amonim, this is to be considered, you know, like trustworthy. In other words, he means it for your good, okay? Ne'atoros nishiko sone. On the other hand, the kisses of an enemy, you know, he falls all over you and he kisses you and hugs you and so on, whereas, you know, in his heart, like doesn't mean it.
Like Asa, didn't
you? Right. So in other words, better to be wounded by someone who you know loves you than it is to be kissed, you know, by someone who ultimately hates you. It says, Tova klola, great is the, or good is the curse, Shekilel Achyo HaShilone Sisoel, that Achyo HaShilone cursed the people of Israel, Yoser, it's worth more, Mibrocho Shebeuchon Bilam Harosha, worth more than the blessing which Bilam Harosha, the wicked Bilam, you know, blessed the people of Israel. We remember, of course, the famous story about Bilam, who was hired to curse the people of Israel, right? And lo and behold, he blessed them, right? So we would think, oh boy, look at that. Our enemies bless us. Isn't that wonderful? You know, it's like people with the peace process in Israel today, loyally. You know, the PLO, they're our friends right now. Yasser Arafat, our ally.
Now he is.
Yeah, right now.
He says he is.
Yeah, he says he is, right.
Who is Achya
HaShiloni? Achya HaShiloni, in other words, Achya was a prophet who came from the town of Shiloh, and he prophesied in the days of Yeravim ben Nebat, the days when the kingdom of Solomon came to an end,
right,
and you had Yeravim and Rechabah, okay? So this specifically was what he had to say to Yeravim ben Nebat, but he could equally have said it also to Rechabah, the king of Judah. Because unfortunately, you know, he caused the kingdom to split, and it also brought disaster to the people of Israel, ultimately. Achiya, right? Hashiloni means who came from Shiloh, okay? Prophet came from the town of Shiloh.
He lived a long time, didn't
he? Well, yeah, he was an old man at the time, right? Because he had already begun prophesying in the days of King Solomon, and it continued, as I say, in the days of Rechabam, who was Solomon's son, and Yeravim ben Nebat, who split the kingdom from Rechabam and became, you know, the king of the 10 tribes of Israel. Okay. What?
Who?
Okay, that's already Kabbalah. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. So he says, you know, that his curse was worth more to the people of Israel than the bracha that Bilam HaRosha did. Why? Because Achya Shiloni Klolon Bekone. When Achya Shiloni cursed the people of Israel, it was by comparing it with what? With a reed. He says that you're like a reed that moves on the face of the water, right? On the surface of the water. Omar Lahem Yisrael, he said to the people of Israel, V'hikad Hashem Yisrael kasha yodud hakone, right? That God will smite Israel even as the reed moves. Ma kone zeh umid b'mokem mayim. So just as this reed is standing literally in a place where there is, you know, lots of water. The gizo machlib, and not only that, but the stem, right, the stem, so to speak, machalif. Machlif means it keeps on growing again and again, okay? That even, let's say, if you peel it, it will put on a new skin or something like that. So, v'shor ashor merubim has lots and lots of roots, right? V'apilu kol ha'rucha shebo elam bo'es v'neshvasvel, and even if all the winds in the world would come and blow upon it, ein mezilzel sosam in makomo, they will not move it from its place, elo hole chavo mahem, but rather it continues to go and come together with them. In other words, as the water, as the wind blows, right? So it moves along together with them, right? Boy mahem, yeah. So domemu haruchos, and then when the winds quiet down, literally become silent, right? So then omad hakonabim komo, the reed stands in its place that has not been moved ultimately, right? So this is a bracha. The people of Israel may, you know, have to face winds blowing upon them and so on and so forth, but still the people of Israel will remain
resilient.
Yeah, resilient, exactly. And, you know, they will not lose, you know, their stand, so to speak. Aval Bilam HaRasha, Bilam the wicked, he says, Berchom B'Yeres, he blessed them by comparing them to what? To a cedar. We think, oh boy, this is terrific, right? After all, the cedar tree is considered one of the most beautiful trees that we have in the Middle East. Now, I remember when I was in France studying one year, they had a cedar tree that had been brought from Israel and planted in the park over there in the city of Rennes.
Mm.
So,
mostly in Lebanon?
Yeah, Lebanon and Israel, right. But of course, Lebanon became famous. I mean, this is why we say, you know, Tzadok HaTomei, okay, Erez Balmonion Yizke, you know, he will grow tall like a cedar in Lebanon and so on, right? Yes?
Even if you
have,
you ever said
was directed by the Eibishter? Yeah, it was directed by the Eibishter, the opposite of what he meant. Okay. Well, all right. Let's go weiter. Okay. So he blessed them by comparing them to an eres, to a cedar tree. Shenemar, karozim, right? Even like cedars. Okay. Now alei mayim is being omitted over here because it doesn't work out with the upon water. We'll see. It doesn't quite work out with the simile that we have over here. Okay, because he's trying to say as follows. Actually, it could, yeah, as we'll see, it might be justified. It says, Ma eres eino omeid b'mkomayim. That's the reason why it's omitted. Okay, he says, look, this cedar tree is not in a place where there is water all around it, right? The reed has water all around it, but the eres does not have, okay? So it does not have water. The yain gives a machlif, and you know, starting to peel the bark, and what do you get? It does not rejuvenate, okay? The yain shorashom merubim, nor does it have many roots. So, apilu kol orucha shebo elam neshwes bo, right? E mezizos oso mimekomo. So it says, even if all the winds in the world blow upon it, they're not going to move it from its place. And of course Rashi immediately senses that there's something that's not quite right with the simile over here. So for this we have to take a look at the Rashi again. Okay. Okay. You see, Erezeh Eino Omeid B'Mekomayim. Rashi is, you know, why does it say Aleimayim, right? And then it says that Erezeh, this cedar tree doesn't stand where there is water. He says, V'yapal gab dechsib dekro. So even though it is written in the Pasuk, Ka rozim alimayim, right? Like cedars upon water. He says, Ahu la Bilam ka omale. He says, no, it wasn't Bilam who said that. The Bilam omar, because what did Bilam say? He said simply, Ka rozim. He wants the people to be like cedars. But the angel who was listening to Bilam contradicted Bilam's wish by saying, upon water. And likewise with all the other things that Bilam said, right to Bilam, Omar can call him, he said, you know, like streams of water, the Zimnim is Yashun, you know, because streams of water, what he had in mind is that streams of water will dry up. And so the Malach came and he said, Notoyu. He says, no, because these streams of water will never dry up. The Ein Yevesh on the Yolam, they'll never be dry. V'hainu Dechsiv, and this is the meaning then of the Pasuk that says, V'yapich HaRishem Lekech Lecho Es HaKlola Livrocha, that God turned the, for your sake, the curse of Bilam unto a blessing. Right. Al Yedei Malach. Now how did he do it? He did it by means of a Malach. Sheho Shivu Al Yedei Malach, because he placed the Malach right next to Bilam. Of course, Bilam couldn't see the Malach, right? Except, you know, when the Malach tried to, you know, to stop him from going over there. But this was a Malach, you know, who was prepared, you know, to thwart his evil designs upon the people of Israel. All right. So that, therefore, when it says, now take a look at the next line of Rashi, Filo kol arucho, so that even if all the winds blow upon it, says, so Rashi says, she'inon koshos, we're talking about only light winds, right, they're not difficult winds, light winds. That's what we mean, that the light winds, that whatever the white winds come, whether it comes from the north, the south, the east, the west, whatever it may be, they're not going to cause the cedar to go from its place, right? But, kevan, I come back again to the text of the Gemara. However, when a strong southern wind blows upon, they have to realize, by us, if we have a southern wind, it's coming from Dixie or someplace like that, you know, so it could be very nice, you know. John Quill would approve of it, I guess. But in Eretz Israel, it's quite a different story. In Eretz Israel, when you have a wind coming in from Africa, right, it could be awfully hot and miserable, you know, right. So, in that case, O kartov yefachto al ponot, you'll take that cedar, tear it up by its roots, and turn it on its face. In other words, knock it down. Below old. And not only that, elish zocho kone litole menu kumas. The reed also has another zuchus, another merit. What is the other merit? The merit is that from reeds you can make a kulmus. Kulmus is a type of a pen that the sofer uses in order to write. Dichtoibe sefer Torah, and with it he can write a sefer Torah, right? Nevi'im, or he could write prophets or uksuvim, or the you know the. The holy writings, okay?
Megillos.
That we have, right, like the Megillos and Tillim and Mishle and Eov and so on and so on. You know, in other words, the last part of the Tanakh is called Ksuv. So you have to realize that we are used to printed texts, but certainly printed texts didn't exist 2,000 years ago or 3,000 years ago, something like that. How did they record? The answer is they had to write. They had to write these things. And this was the tradition. So not only do we have Sifrei Torah, you know, but we also have to this day, in many places, like, for example, they'll write scrolls of the Nevi'im, and then when it comes to reading a Haftorah, they have to have a Malkriya who reads the Haftorah out of the scroll. I've had that experience when I was in Eretz Yisrael. I mean, that I read... for example, the Haftorah is taken from Yeshayahu that I read. You know, I was there, let's say, in the summertime when we had Haftorahs like, let's say, Nachamu, Vetomet Zion, and so on. You
when
know,
I was a kid,
so I read them from the scroll actually over there.
When
yeah.
I was a kid,
in a village, we had a scroll.
Yeah.
Yeah,
when I was a kid,
they have separate scrolls. They have a scroll for Yeshaya, they have a separate scroll for Yirmiyon, another one for Yechezkel, another one for Yosef, and so on.
It's
yeah.
not amazing.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, that's how it was in my shul. They didn't have Torah from a scroll. That's
right.
How they have Torah was every week in my shul when I was a kid.
So that you find shuls even to this day that do that.
But my shul is closed down now.
Yeah. So no, around here you don't see it, but we still have over here in the yard a couple of books, mm-hmm. a couple of scrolls. Unfortunately, in such condition that I couldn't use it in public anymore. But if they were in good condition, I would be happy to read from a scroll itself, because that is really the mitzvah, you know. Just as we read Megillas Esther out of a scroll, so the tradition is more, you know, to read the other Megillas also out of a scroll.
So
like the Book of Ruth and Kohelis and so on.
Bar Mitzvah was a hassle in my shul. I didn't do the Haftarah eventually.
Yeah, well, that I can understand.
Yeah.
Because in shuls of this type, mm-hmm. what they usually do is that, you know, the person who is honored with the mafti, he says the bracha, mm-hmm. and then the Baal Kriya does the Haftarah. Mm-hmm. This is the usual custom. Just as the Baal Kriya does, you know, the Kriya from the Torah, so he does it also from the Haftarah, in this case. So it's something more, you know, that you have to learn how to do.
Where in this tradition,
or the various yeshivas that they have. Mm-hmm. Yeshivas particularly go into that, yeah.
Where was it in London?
The shul was Machzike Hadas.
Which I'm sure is a very frum shul by the sound of the name.
Yeah.
It was in the East End. It's now a mosque.
Before it was
a mosque?
Well, before it was a mosque, it was a Huguenot chapel. So.
Oh. Yeah, I read about that. It was the one that you write
Huguenot
chapel.
No.
I think
they
did see it as a mosque.
So yeah, it's gone through Gilgulam, as we say.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think there's one in Canada with the same name.
Okay, so let's go.
When we're talking about the juxtaposition of a reed and an oak, I mean, here is
yes,
a cedar, but where am I thinking of? I mean, this cedar, the reed and the oak, I mean, is this a piece of spable or something?
No. It's a Talmudic.
Is
this
in
Peric
or something?
Yes, exactly. In the Peric, because it says.
In Peric, it's slightly different over there. They don't say about a reed.
No,
it's
they
not there.
The reed.
What they're comparing you is, right, a person, you know, who, let's say, he has the learning, but he doesn't practice.
Right?
So he's compared to a tree which has very few roots, and the wind can come and destroy it.
Right.
Whereas if a person has the masim, you know, right? Mm-hmm. In that case. So likewise, in a similar case with chachma and, yiras chet, that you have to have yiras chet, mm-hmm. that's more important. In other words, you know, real reverence for God is more important than simply possessing wisdom.
Was there one of Aesop's fables that talks about a reed and an oak tree or something? I mean, where is
there may be something similar to it. If it's not Aesop, maybe it's something like La Fontaine or something like that.
The one with if the ma'asim are greater than the chokhmah, they use almost the exact word.
That's similar. The language is similar, but as I said over there, they don't mention the word kana at all. Here, they're using the word kana to indicate, first of all, what we said, you know, that the people of Israel, you know, as bad as the situation is, but yet it turns out to be a bracha for them, just as the preceding statements also said. All right, Yirmiyahu compares Jerusalem to a nida, but it may be a blessing, mm-hmm. because
she becomes
She becomes clean again and is beloved by her husband, right? Or ke'almono, like a widow, rather than a widow,
mm-hmm.
which means that her husband will return unto her and so on and so forth, right? So likewise over here, he's saying that Israel is like a kona, like a reed, in that we learn how to survive no matter what kind of winds come and blow upon us. Why? Because we have the deep roots and the nourishment, the mayim, of course you can bring it over here to bear, although they don't mention over here, but we know that mayim is one of the favorite things, you know, for Torah, right? So that if Israel has its roots deeply embedded in the living waters of Torah, so no matter what they do to the people of Israel, we will come up and, as soon as the persecution stops, in other words, the wind stopped blowing, right? So in that case, we come right back again to our full height, right? We take our stand and we exist. Whereas the cedar, he says, It doesn't have the same roots, even though it's magnificent and everything else, but as soon as an extremely strong wind comes, so it's going to tear it, you know, from its roots, and that's the end of it. Okay? Now, as we see then, the Kana then represents, you know, the humility of the people of Israel, and now he carries out the idea that Kana is a symbol for humility. Okay? How is it a symbol for humility? So we have a beautiful story now that we're going to read. Tana Rabba. Sages taught us, the Yolam Yehe Odom Rach Ki Kona V'Yal Yehe Kosher Keres. A person, you see, before we were talking about people of Israel, right, as a nation. But he says over here now that even individuals should be what? They should be Rach Ki Kona, they should be as gentle or as soft as a reed, and not as hard or stiff-necked, as if you wish, as a cedar. And now he brings a little story to tell us this. Maisa, it's a story about Shabbat Rabbi Elozer Reb Shimon and Migdol Gedor, that a certain Rabbi Elozer ben Shimon who was a scholar and who came from the town of Migdol Gedor, okay, Mebeis Rabbo, is coming from his teacher's home. The Hoya Rochav al Hamor, he was riding on his donkey, or Metayel al Spas Dahar, and he was, you know, going down, promenading, if you wish, next to a river. The Somach, my book, it's not all the way, but that's what it should be. So the Somach Simcho Gedoylo, and he greatly rejoiced, he was very, very happy. The Hoya Sadatu Gaso Lov, and he was also very filled with pride, because he had learned a great deal of Torah. So in other words, he was a very accomplished Torah scholar, and you know, he was very proud of his achievements as a Torah scholar. And now, lo and behold, let's see what happened. So it so happened that a man came, Shehoyim Echor B'Yosef, who was very, very ugly. Omalo shalom olecho rabbi. So this man greeted the rabbi and he said to him, peace unto you, rabbi. Velo hechsilo. But the rabbi did not reply to him. In other words, the other man greeted him, but he refused to acknowledge the greeting. Not only not acknowledge, I mean, he didn't return, right, the greeting to him. And Omaloi, and to add insult to injury, he insulted him. He said unto him, Reka. Reka means you empty fellow, in other words. Or, you know, some say it means like you wicked person or something like that. He says, Kama mechor osehu ish. What an ugly man this guy is. Didn't even say you are, but you know, he couched it in the third person, but the implication is very clear, right? He says, Shema kol b'nei yichor mechorin kemoscha. Not only did he insult this man by saying what an ugly guy he is, but he also says, and maybe everybody in your town, they're just as ugly as you are. In other words, you're ugly and you come from Uglyville or something like that. So Amalo, so this man said to him, Eini yodea, he says, I don't know. But go and tell the craftsman who made me, meaning of course the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, right? Kama mechor kli zeh she'asisa, look what an ugly vessel you turned out. So kevan sheyoda b'yatzmo shechoto, when he realized now by himself that he had sinned by insulting this man, yorad bin achamor, he got off from the donkey, got down from it, and he prostrated himself before this man. The Yom alone, he said to him, Na nesi lecho, please, I beg you, he says, literally, I humble myself unto you. Mechol li, forgive me. Yom alone, so this man said to him, Eini moich lecho, I will not forgive you. Ad shetelech lo uman shasoni, until you go to the craftsman who made me. They are more low and say unto him, Kama mechor kli zeh she'asisa. Go tell the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, look what an ugly guy you made, right? So, what did he do? Hayom etayel acharav, so he kept on going, following after him, Ad she'hegia le'iro, until he came to the place where this man lived. Yotzu b'nei iro likroso, So the people of his town came out to greet him. And they said to him, Shalom Alecha, Rabbi, Rabbi. Peace unto you, O Rabbi, Rabbi. Mori, Mori, my teacher, my teacher. Omalehem. So this man said unto the people of the town, he said, Lemi atem korim, Rabbi, Rabbi. Who are you calling Rabbi, Rabbi? Rabbi, Rabbi. So Amrulai, so they said to him, this man who is following you. Omalehem. So he said to them, Imze Rabbi, if this is a rabbi, Yibu Kemosa Yisrael, let there not be many like him among the Jewish people. Omrulo, so they said to him, Ibnei Ma, for what reason? So Omalehem, so he said unto them, Kach the Kach Wasali, this is what he did to me. In other words, what he had to say to me. So Omrulo, so they said to him, Afal pichein, nevertheless, mecholo, please forgive him, they said. She'odam golo b'toyrobi, because he is, after all, a great Torah scholar. Oma lohem, so he said to them, bishvilchem hareini mechel. All right, for your sake, I will forgive him. Uvilvad, but on condition, shelo yehei rogil asos kein, that he should not be in the habit of doing, you know, the same thing. Niyad nichnas Rabbi Elozer ben Rabbi Shimon. So immediately Rabbi Elozer ben Rabbi Shimon entered. Of course, entered means like he entered the Beis Medrash. With Dorash, and he gave the following drasha, the following sermon. He said, Li olam yehi odom rach kekone. Always a person should be gentle like a reed. V'yal yehi kosher ke'eretz, and he should not be hard. Like a conceited, if you wish, you know, like a cedar tree. Well, a fichach, and this is the reason that Zocha Konelitol Hemener Kulmis Latoybe Sefer Teot Filmisus. This is the reason why the reed had this chus, it has the merit that they take from it and make it into a pen in order to write with it a Sefer Torah, Filin, and Mizuzas. Okay? All right? I think it's a good place. I think we'll stop at this point. Okay? And continue. So we're on Chof, Omid Beis, right down the middle of the page. Okay?
This is October 19th, 1994.
Right, right. And next week, Miyot Hashem will continue to meet at the same time. Same place, same station. Okay? Long line over here. Okay, V'chein Yishyesh Bodevo Mapolis. Okay? All right. This, of course, is the quotation from the Mishnah. And if you remember, what it says is that a city wherein the plague is raging, or a city wherein houses are falling down, so again, what is it? Masriyat. Masriyat miyad. In other words, you have to begin, you know, fast, and you shrei to the Rabbeinu Shalom, and so on, you know, to put an end to the plague, whether it's a plague, as we see, which is a, you know, physical in nature, as you know, Dever, or whether it's a plague upon your houses or something like that, you know. So Tana Rabbanan. All right. So they're dealing now, first of all, actually with the last thing, with the Mapolis. They'll get around to Dever afterwards. But
the houses going down.
Yeah. Someone once mentioned many years ago. I still remember what he had to say. So it's written in Pirkei Avos, you know, that the sign is, one of the signs of a Chochem is that, you know, that when he talks, in other words, he goes in the order that, you know, the first thing that was mentioned, so he gets back to that, he answers that, right? And then the last thing, he answers to that. So that presumably to answer in the right order is very important. Nevertheless, we see that sometimes it doesn't quite work that way, but instead, the Gemara likes, I mean, they'll say A and B, but before discussing A, they prefer to discuss B, because that was just mentioned. So, okay, it's been halching the buy, right? Yeah. So let's go and discuss that. So that, therefore, they are discussing Mapolis, all right? Which we see over here means houses fall. Tana Rabbanan. Sages taught us, Mapole Sheomru, of course, you know, this will be a Baraisa. Okay, Mapole Sheomru, the business of, you know, houses falling that they're talking about. So naturally, what are we talking about? We're talking about burios v'lo re'uos. We're talking about houses that are sturdy to begin with and not broken down. Bori, of course, we use today in the sense of, you know, healthy. Okay, but since in English we don't say a healthy house, so we'll call it a sturdy house. Okay. And, okay, and then it continues and it says, She'enon re'uyes lipo, those houses that are not about to fall, actually, literally, that aren't fit to fall, but again, the word fit in English doesn't quite work out over here, right? So, that are not about to fall, velo ho'ra'uyes lipo, and we're not talking about houses that, you know, they're just about ready to fall down. In other words, very simply, if sturdy houses fall, this we can consider a plague, something bad, you know, you have to, but if houses that are ready to fall collapse, and this, so this yeah, is so it happens, it's all right. So now the Gemara wants to know the following. It says, Hainihu Briyos, Hainihu Shenurus Lipo. Look, why does this Barisa mention, you know, sturdy? And then it says also, and they're not about to fall, right? In other words, why use two expressions for the same thing? This is a basic question. And, of course, the opposite is true as well. Hai nihu ru'os, hai nihu ru'os lipo. And how about the qualifier ru'os, which means, you know, broken down, and or weak, if you wish, right? And those that are about to fall. Obviously, you know, again, they're talking about the same thing, aren't they? So he says, lo tzricha. No, not so. We need two different expressions. But why do we need two different expressions? He says, the noflu machmas gubayhu. It's because it is possible that the wall itself may have been a strong wall, but it was supporting a house that was too tall for the wall. So in other words, why did the wall fall? The wall fell because of the height of the structure. It was simply, you know, not strong enough to support that. So you can't fault the wall, but on the other hand, it's not right. So therefore, sturdy, yes, but it fell. Why? Even though it was sturdy. So that therefore we have to have two different expressions. All right, now he asks the same question. Inami, or another explanation. It says, the Kaimon Aguda de Nahara. Maybe these houses are standing literally at the wall, but it doesn't, in English we don't say the wall. They're standing at the shore of a river. The reason why I say wall is because a little later on we'll see that the word Guda normally means a wall. Okay? But over here, the translation is really that these houses are standing at the shore of a river. Now, naturally, again, the house could be a sturdy house were it located elsewhere than at the riverbank. But if it's located on the riverbank, then of course there's going to be erosion. As Rashi points out, take a look at the Rashi. Okay, Rashi is on the, you see it says Torah Or over there? This is be the fifth line of the Rashi. Okay? He says, Lo tzricha, right, we need it, the kaiman aguda de nahra, you know, where they stand at the bank of the river. And he explains, he says, Ma polis sheyesham ruach chozak. The falling down of the house occurs because a strong wind comes, shemapil achomas, and it knocks down the walls. So, Ma polis sheomru masrin alehen, the rios kamida, says, where are we saying that you have to begin fasting and, you know, having special prayers in the case of houses falling? This is Bivrios come in other words, where houses are strong, are sturdy. Sheyuhu achumas brios, where the walls are sturdy. The Yafal Bichain, and nevertheless, Noflus, they fall down. Why? Because the wind is very, very strong. In other words, let's say a hurricane hits them, right? And so the house collapsed, right?
But that could be a mapola too.
Sure, absolutely. That's also mapola, right? Abol imhoyu achomas anoflus v'uos. But if the walls that fall were, to begin with, you know, very weak, then emas v'inolihen, and you don't fast for them. Usheinon ruiz lipol, and when they're not about to fall, masrian alehem, then you do. But below bereuyos lipol, but not with those that are about to fall. He says, lo tzvicha, but nevertheless we need it for when, hode kotonishen ruiz lipol. He says, elo kigon, except we need it for the case where the kaya guda denaro. And he explains, how do we know what it means? He says, it's al spas adohor, it says, on the bank of the river. She'afal pi, she'ibriyo, because even though the house itself is sturdy, ru'uya hilipol, the house can fall. She'hamayim apilim osa, because the water will cause it to fall. She'mekalkalin es hakarko, the water spoils the ground. V'shochakin es hayesod, and it wears away the foundation of the house. So that, therefore, in that case, we need it. Right. All right, so since we're talking already about houses falling, so we have a story now, okay? Mm-hmm. Story is as follows. Ki ahi ashiso re'ua, as in the case of a certain wall which was not sturdy, the Habe ben Naharda, and it was in the city of Naharda. Naharda, of course, was one of the most prominent yeshiva centers in Babylonia, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a wall which was not sturdy. And the law Hava Chalef Rav Shmuel Tusa. And Rav and Shmuel would never pass by in front of this wall or under this wall. Apal Kav de Gaima Ba'asru Atleis Hashanim. And this in spite of the fact that this wall, which looked like it was about to collapse, was standing there for 13 years. So he'd say, look, if it stands for 13 years, I mean, it has to be sturdy enough. But nevertheless, they refused to pass by over there. They were afraid of it. They were afraid it might collapse on them. So, Yom Echad, one day, Ikla Rav Oda Bar Ahava Lohosam. Rav Oda Bar Ahava came to this place. Omale Shmuel Rav, so Shmuel said to Rav, Nesimar Nakiv, what do you say we go again